The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We shift gears just a bit as we confront some of the very troubling things that we've been seeing on the national landscape. And we have no shortage of issues, that's for sure. But this, when it comes to our children and some of what we're seeing, it requires a national discussion on many elements. And joining us this morning is someone who's definitely well-equipped to guide us in how we should be thinking, some of the things that we need to consider. Let's welcome to our program clinical psychologist, and I'll allow her to give us a background and endless different things she's involved in. Let's welcome to our program Krista Soraya Ali, clinical psychologist. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pertinent discussion. It's timely. The front page of the Guardian newspaper tells us why. We really didn't need the Guardian this morning to tell us why, because we've been having the discussion for quite some time. Things have been happening with our children that have many people concerned about whether or not we are dealing with it right. We know how to deal with certain things. We're dropping the ball. But before we get into all of those nitty-gritty issues, let me allow you to familiarize our listeners with you. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about some of the things that you're involved in so they can have a greater understanding for your perspective.
Okay, so as you said, I am a clinical psychologist and I've been working at the Children's Authority for over 8 years now, close to 9 years. So I've been with the authority since we launched and, right. So I've been part of that groundwork like from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what I do would be trauma intervention with children who come to our attention who have experienced child abuse. Now that can take, a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
At the authority, we are tasked with the care and protection of all of our children. So this is when we receive reports. These reports are investigated. Then children might go through an assessment, and then after that assessment, they will be referred to me to receive some intervention. At the authority, we work hand in hand with a lot of different external stakeholders, because one agency, as you rightfully said just now, the landscape of Trinidad and Tobago right now really shows us that we are not treating our children very well.
Mm-hmm.
We are not. And this has been the case for decades. This has been the case long before Children's Authority has been here to look at the statistics.
Mm-hmm.
So no one agency is able to meet all of the child protection needs right now that's happening in Trinidad. We're partnering with external stakeholders, with NGOs, with other agencies. And we're out here, we're trying to bring awareness to the public as well on what can be done for us to work together to bring these numbers down. Because as you said, the things that we are seeing right now in terms of how we're treating our children is simply not correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply not right. And something really needs to be done for us to be taking better care of our children.
I'm looking at the Guardian newspaper here, and they have about 17 cases of children who met untimely demise. And actually, it's much more than 17, because the Peter King incident is 4 of them in one.
Correct.
So it's about 20. And we are seeing, I probably could use the term crime, because that's what we see, children being murdered.
Yes.
That's not something that we've seen in years gone by in the volume that we've been seeing.
That we're currently seeing it.
It says that we have a breed of criminal who's as heartless as you can get. To look at a 10-year-old and put a bullet in their head, to assassinate a 13-year-old who came forward as being a rape victim. You have a criminal that's stalking this land who has no moral scruples. In times gone by, we were told that there was an unspoken code amongst criminals where women and children were treated differently. And when assassins came, they came for the target and the target alone. Now we have no respect for collateral damage, which are some of these cases. And in some instances, the children themselves were the intended victim.
Correct.
What's causing this? I'm asking you a question that you may never be able to answer, but how have we come to this stage?
as you rightfully said, right, there seems to be some sort of breakdown in the moral fabric of Trinidad and Tobago, where crime has been out of control for a very long time. Now, when persons start doing things that are considered to be wrong, when you do one thing that's wrong, it actually becomes easier to do another thing and to become even more devious in your behavior. I believe this might be one of the factors that's playing into this, where children, and unfortunately it is starting at that level, where children are being inaugurated into these criminal activities and behaviors for various reasons that has nothing to do with the child, right? It's the adults who are initiating them into this type of behavior. Because kids don't wake up one day and say, hey, I'm going to be a criminal today. It starts very young of behaviors, what they are seeing and what they're accustomed to, and it's really a cycle. So they're starting at a younger age. We're finding more and more that children are being charged with severe crimes, with dangerous crimes. So it becomes much easier for them to start engaging in even more devious criminal behavior as they get older. You are very right that I feel like more and more we're seeing children who might be the bystanders are being collateral damage in the wars that's happening among the adults around them. Mm-hmm. And as you said, in some cases, the targets. And that's very scary, because that is so much of a step in the wrong direction, where agencies like the Children's Authority are trying to promote the well-being of children. In general, this is what we're supposed to be doing, allowing children to enjoy their childhood, be free of the burdens of adulthood. And more, this is not what's happening with our children.
One of the things that I've been in this business for a long time. This year makes it 27 or 28 years that I've been in the media. The media, I don't know if people understand how traumatic this job can be, because it puts you in situations that the average individual doesn't get to ever probably witness in their lifetime, and kudos for people who never go through that. I've been to situations where I see young people be the victims of crime.
Yeah.
And abuse is one thing, because in abuse you have not as less of an issue, but you have a survivor. We have instances now where children are not survivors. They are statistics. And one of the things that has happened over the years is a younger, more emboldened breed of criminal. And I don't know if the authorities have taken stock of that. When I say authorities, police and everybody else who's supposed to be dealing with it, have taken stock that we now have this criminal who's younger, who's more feel more empowered, who is less tied to moral scruples and the religious tenets and upbringing that we associate with people of this age. You have assassins who are 14 and 15 years old, who
yes.
have kills, not a kill, kills under their belt, because they just don't care. They've been taught that this is the life I live. I carry it out to the fullest of my ability. When I die, I die. I die a glorious death, because it's seen as a ranking thing now. The more people I could kill, the better for me. I remember having a discussion with someone at Police Administration Building in either 2006 or 2007 when I was with CNC3. And I had asked him, I can't remember the person's name right now. He was a high-ranking police officer. And I had asked him, because we were seeing some crimes with children in school, whether or not we needed to start treating children as adults before the court system as a means of arresting the situation that was presenting itself. He couldn't answer me. Obviously, that wasn't his jurisdiction, because that would have been a legislative agenda by any administration of the day. But our politicians have failed us as well. So we're talking at this point in time about serious crime in children, criminal activity in children, because we'll carry the conversation to abuse and we'll carry the conversation to neglect, because those are the other elements of what we are seeing in some of these cases, the drowning in the water park and some of the other cases as well. What should we be doing?
Well, all of these things are linked. all of what you're saying there is definitely linked, because those children who you're talking about who become statistics, the likelihood of abuse that's occurring there as well is extremely high,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we find that children who are in abusive situations tend to be more likely in dangerous situations and risky situations where they are put more likely at harm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so as a society, all of this needs to change. One thing doesn't need to change for all of it to change. Everything needs to start changing together. And as a society, we need to start doing better. And as you correctly said, crime is such an important part of that, where now children are being victims within that space. Within that space where it usually tend to have been adults. But now children are being pulled into that as well. And it's definitely so much steps backward. We need to start paying more attention to our children. And this is where the issue of child neglect is coming in. If we start paying more attention to our children, giving them the proper tools and the proper guidance that they require, then we're going to start seeing less child criminals.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start seeing less children who are engaging in criminal behaviors. And of course, this is not going to be an overnight thing. But hopefully, within some generations or some decades to come, then we're going to start seeing significant drops in the number of children who are involved in criminal activities and in crime in general.
Here's a controversial question. How much is culture related to what we're seeing? When I say culture, I don't necessarily mean Indian and African, I mean community-wise.
Gang culture.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it. Because like you said, this is what they're accustomed seeing now. This is what they're growing up seeing, where they live in this particular sort of lifestyle, the gang lifestyle, where certain things, you know, they're not looking at getting good grades or passing for a good school as something that is noteworthy, right? It's how much persons I have killed or how much persons I have robbed, the level of violence that I'm engaging in, these are now the things that they're holding as important. How much money can I make? What do I have? The things that I possess. Those are the things that are important. So that is actually a huge part of it.
I've listened to conversations with people who come from various communities, and it shakes me to my core that there are communities who believe that engaging in crime is okay.
Yeah.
There are communities who believe that taking next people's thing is okay. And
also justified. They find various ways to justify that type of behavior and make it okay, and tell themselves and others around them that this is okay. I have been given less by society. I was born into a life of less. Therefore, it is simply okay for me to take what I want. And that is a part of the culture that is built into them. And that is what is perpetuating a lot of this, where these type of things, they are actually able to justify it in their mind. Now, humans, we find ways to justify things that we do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's part of it. Everybody is born in the same way.
Right.
And then we grow, and then things are put on us, like in terms of ethics, in terms of moral values and things like that. So as a child, you develop a sense of conscience and knowing right from wrong based on what you observe and based on what you are being taught. Some of these children are being taught at a very young age that this type of behavior is simply okay. And I see this all the time in children who are abused. Some children, those who experience sexual abuse from a very young age, they grow up thinking that this is okay, that this type of behavior between an adult and a child is something that is not spoken about, but something that is okay. So we have to understand that these children are literally being molded into that, so that their morals, their values are so very different at the core than what you and I experience. It's almost like their brain and the workings and the work up of their brain is completely altered from a very, very young age. This is why we're able to see younger children engaging in such devious criminal behaviors.
You know, I don't know how much of the population understands the depth of the conversation we're having, and how deep-rooted some of these things are to change. because perspective is an interesting thing. Perspective dictates very much how you treat things. Because you have children who are taught that the police need to be respected.
Yes.
And that the police need to be obeyed.
Right.
And that whatever the police tell you, you don't question, you don't challenge, you follow. And then you have on the flip side of that, people who are being told, you see them, we don't listen to them. They don't care about we don't follow the police. The police not on we side. We against the police. You fight everything that the police tells
Sometimes
you.
Sometimes it's worse than that, and they are almost vilified.
Uh-huh.
And that they turn those persons into villains. If you as a child grow up hearing that consistently, not only that we're not supposed to listen to them, but that they are a villain who needs to be taken down, who needs to be taken out. That is what you're going to grow up with. And with, you know, as I was saying, engaging in small-time criminal behaviors while you're growing up is going to lead to larger things, because you lose that sense of conscience. You lose any sort of the ambiguity of right and wrong goes away when you engage in that behavior further.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes almost normal. It's their normal. And of course, I'm saying normal in quotations, because normal to everybody is very different. We see these things as being absolutely abnormal. We see this type of behavior as being very deviant, but this is there every day. So if today I wake up and, you know, with my friends, I'm able to do one robbery, one minor robbery. A year from now, there's nothing stopping me from engaging in that robbery and committing grievous bodily harm with a dangerous weapon. And these are the kind of charges that we are seeing being brought against minors.
Mm. So in the work that the Children's Authority has been seeing, what are the trends when it comes to children and criminal activity?
So I can't speak to the statistics regarding criminal activity, but being a part of that newly developed children's court, these are the things that we're seeing, where more and more children are being charged with severe crimes, with serious crimes.
When you say children, what age are we talking about?
I would say teenagers. So a lot of it would be teenage males, not saying that girls are not included in that as well, but teenage, and from very young ages, 12, 13, 14, all the way up. So we consider a child to be anybody
under
below the age
of
18.
Mm-hmm.
And they've now set up a court specifically to deal with child matters.
Okay.
A lot of it would be drug related. And then a lot of it is dangerous crimes. But the link that I have seen as well is that a lot of the dangerous crimes goes back to a drug related crime, where they might be engaging in the severe crimes in order to fuel drug habits. And this is something that we're not talking about enough as well. The number of young persons who are addicted to substances.
What are the substances that they're addicted to?
It's usually very frequently marijuana, because it is so easily accessible. But we do have children who are also addicted to other substances such as cocaine, methamphetamines,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to take a couple messages to take us up to the top. We've got news at 8 o'clock, and on the other side of 8, ladies and gentlemen, we continue our discussion. This very, very interesting discussion that we're having here this morning about children and young adults and what's going on with them. And we will turn our attentions to some of the other things that we've been seeing as we continue our discussion with our special guest here this morning. That is Krista Soraya Ali, clinical psychologist. Stay with us.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Four minutes after 8, the final hour of our show here this morning. We're discussing all things related to children. And some of the very heart-wrenching, some of the concerning things that we've been seeing Our special guest here this morning, clinical psychologist Krista Soraya Ali, spent a lot of our discussion focusing on the issue of crime. And for those of you who'd like to join the conversation, feel free to give us a call on 627-3223, 625-2257. And moving a bit away from crime, onto the issue of neglect. That has garnered some attention as well because of what we've seen. In the space of a week, we had three children who died in very unfortunate circumstances. One drowned at a pool. Then we had another three-year-old dying under circumstances that are questionable. And it goes on and on and on. And it raises the issue of whether or not neglect is factored into what led to the demise of these children. And do we understand the role and responsibilities that persons who are charged with caring for children, what they really need to do? Are we dropping the ball? Or is it just a case where the frequency, it's abnormal? This is just something that's happening and we have to find a way to deal with it. Let's focus on the issue of responsibility and neglect. They go hand in hand. And tell us about, you've obviously been, because of your job, you would have been taking note of what's going on. What's your opinion? Are we dropping the ball?
This ball is being dropped. So let me start by explaining what exactly is neglect, because we're talking about that word, but I'm not sure that persons fully understand this concept of neglect. Neglect is a form of abuse, but it's sort of an umbrella term for several other types of neglect that can happen with children. At its very core, neglect is essentially when parents or guardians are not attending to the needs of children, and they are being put in situations that is likely to bring harm to them. Now, that is quite broad. When we're looking at the topic of neglect, there are a couple different types. The main one that we seem to focus on is physical neglect, where parents and guardians are not attending to the physical needs of children, including providing basic needs, food, shelter, clothing, and a part of that is proper supervision. A big part of neglect as well, and what we're commonly seeing, is abandonment. That's where we don't even know where these parents are. They just leave the children in very dangerous circumstances and disappear. And this child is now left there with no parent, no guardian, no one to take care of them. And quite often, harm ends up coming to that child. In some situations, somebody is able to get to that child, seek medical attention, and bring them to the attention of the authorities. In other situations, the child dies.
The situation with the child drowning at the water park is one that we probably should focus on a bit. Not that we want to, because I know there's an investigation going on, so we need to be mindful of what we say. But that being said, there are some glaring issues in the public domain that are cause for concern. I've been to that park, that water park, And I carried my daughter to that water park some time ago, a couple of years ago. Well, there's always a lot of people there. So when I got the story and some of the details, I could not understand for the life of me how a park as populated as that one, with as many people as that one usually has on any given day, a five-year-old boy could have wandered into the adult pool and nobody saw him until he was dead.
So a lot of things is coming up from what you're saying there, right? Firstly, yes, you are correct. We can't speak to any cases, any specific cases where there might be criminal investigations that are ongoing. What I will do is speak in a general sense. Mm-hmm. Because in addition to that case that you are speaking of, over the years, we have been seeing trends where children are ending up dead near bodies of water. Every year, before the school holidays, Children's Authority comes out on all sorts of media stations, all networks, to talk about proper supervision near bodies of water, because it's not only in the pools, it's at the beach. it's at home where persons have pools as well. This is considered to be neglect because of the same thing that I was just talking about, where children are not being given proper supervision. And it, you know, you're talking about this park where there's so much people. You're wondering how that might have happened. The thing is, though, looking after children is supposed to be somebody's main job at that space. We can't depend, you as a parent, you can't depend on the eyes and ears of other persons to look after your child. We always encourage that when children are being taken to anywhere where, you know, there's water, at the beach, to these water parks, to pools, somebody needs to be designated to look after children. This can be done in shifts, shared among the adults who are there, but during that time when it's your time to look after the children, that is supposed to be your sole responsibility, because children are precocious by nature. They and being a child, they're able to slip through the cracks so easily and get into spaces that they're not supposed to be. The definition of being a child is that their brains are not developed enough to make the type of decisions that we as adults are supposed to make. So they will look at something that we would know is a dangerous situation and run headfirst into it. A lot of times, these parents and guardians, they seem to take a lot of things for granted when it comes to parenting, when it comes to supervision. I was thinking about this the other day, where before you purchase a car, there's XYZ you need to do. You need to fill out this form, you need to sign this. When you do buy a car, you have an agreement with a bank. There's terms and conditions. When you're ready to drive on the road, you need a permit, you need a license,
you have to do XYZ.
Yeah. And these are things we know that we have to do. But what about when we have a child? There's terms and conditions. There's supposed to be rules and regulations, but because it's not written down anywhere, people are taking a lot of it for granted. Even the things that are written, in terms of even registering the birth of a child, getting them vaccinated, all of these things, more and more we're seeing that persons who are giving birth to children, that they're not doing. Not just moms, but dads as well. Nobody's registering the births of these children. Nobody's getting them immunized. Nobody's taking them to a health center. And all of these things constitute neglect. And I don't think that the public is aware of that.
Is it that we need a big stick approach to corral people into doing what needs to be done? I remember some time ago there was a case that I had done with a child, I can't remember the age, who was left at home alone because the father needed to go to work in the afternoon. And the child, there was a lot of rain. This was in Belmont, and the child managed to get swept away. And the father was subsequently charged.
I am familiar with that case.
Yeah. And I thought that to be such a catch-22 situation, because men are placed in really trying circumstances sometimes.
Yeah.
Just as women are, but we don't focus as much on men as we do as women in the national discussion. He was between a rock and a hard place, needed to find an income because of the obvious. Confronted with a situation where he thought he was doing what was probably best, and it turned tragic. But we've seen other instances where the police were not as quick to charge.
Based on circumstances.
And even though in some instances a child died, we had a case where a child walked out of a house in Mayaro and ended up dead. We have numerous cases where a child in a preschool ended up in a pool. And we could go on and on and on and on and on. It just seems as though there is not consistency with how the police treats with these matters. And there's a story that's making the round internationally where a mother was charged with negligence and negligent death or whatever the charges are.
Negligent death, yeah.
Because she was on the phone at a play park, a water park, and her son drowned. And the police
That's the very definition of negligent death. Yes.
And the police charged her because she was not paying attention to her child.
Right. That led to the demise of the child, which is in direct relation to her behavior.
But do we need more of that? Do we need to charge more parents to send a message that when you have a child, you have a 24/7 responsibility, and you must ensure that you do what you're supposed to. Should we be charging more people?
So these are why we have these laws in place. Now, I can't speak to the police service and what they are doing in these situations. I do know that it differs from case to case. And in some of those cases that you mentioned, I'm really not sure what the outcome was in terms of the criminal aspect of it. In general, though, we need to be more vigilant, and we need to be aware that these things are crimes, that there are criminal penalties that's attached to being neglectful parents. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people are aware of that. I don't know if they're aware that leaving a child at home to supervise another child is something that can be considered to be neglectful behavior that comes with a penalty. Now, what I will tell you is that child neglect has always been one of the highest, in terms of our statistics, the highest reported crime. A lot of the cases that come into the Children's Authority deal with child neglect, and it's usually due to a lack of supervision being provided to children. The pandemic came and made that situation all the more dire, all the more severe, where children were home, schools were closed, mostly everything was closed, and then sometimes parents still had to go out to work, and people, as you said, they find themselves between a rock and a hard place in terms of going out to make a living and not knowing what to do with their children at home. So the incidence of neglect due to a lack of supervision definitely significantly increased during the pandemic.
It highlighted in many instances how much we don't know about what we are supposed to do.
To do versus things that we're inadvertently doing that's actually criminal behavior and leading to the demise of our children. Now, the thing is, 10 times you might leave them home alone and nothing happens. And then the 11th time something does happen. And these are not chances that we're supposed to be taking.
But at what age is it acceptable to leave a child at home? Can you specify an age, or does it depend on the child in question?
It depends on a lot of different factors. I get this question a lot. And it really depends on a lot of different situational factors. Firstly, let's say a 16-year-old should be able to stay at home by themselves. But you need to know your child and what developmental level that your child is at. Because leaving a 16-year-old child who has special needs at home, that's a no-no. That's cause for concern. Another thing is that how many children are you leaving in the care of the older child? This can quickly turn into something that we call parentification of our children, and that is also a crime.
But that is how we grew up.
But I want you to think about this. Was that the right thing?
Well, back then it was seen as the right thing.
And almost preparing you for motherhood. But that takes away the ability of that eldest child, to have a proper childhood, where her main focus, and it was usually the female children,
most times,
her main focus was looking after her siblings and not enjoying her own childhood. I am not saying that older children cannot have responsibilities at home, because that teaches you independence. That teaches you how to function in the real world. But at 15, 16, and the thing is that we're seeing that at much younger ages. We're seeing 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds who are responsible for entire homes, because it might be a single parent household and that parent is working all of the time. That is considered to be neglectful behavior, because that eldest child is not able to have a childhood of their own. And people don't understand the traumatic nature of that and how that actually affects the psychological well-being of that child.
We actually have a case in point, in I think it's Maraval, where we had a fire in a house that a couple children died. And when we drilled down into it, it was a set of teenagers. And the elder one was left to see about these smaller ones and all that kind of thing.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about, where they probably did that before and everything was fine and they came home and all the children were fine. Mm-hmm. But then there will be an instance where things go awry, and that is because children cannot be responsible for all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when we are leaving children home on their own, and you know, I'm talking about very specific cases where it's being done for a short period of time. That's another thing that we need to factor in. This cannot be a whole day, everyday thing where children are being left on their own to supervise their siblings. If it is a short period of time, it is one to two children with a responsible, full, you know, mature, developed teenage person. It needs to be for a short period of time when this is not the main mode of supervision.
But people, you know, it's nice for us to sit here and speak about what should be done and how it should be done and why it should be done. But there are some real-life circumstances that confront people where they do in their minds all that can be done. Because mm-hmm. for a single parent, and this is the instance in the one in Marava that we were told about, mm-hmm. The mother went to work. She left the children in the care of the eldest, who I think was 17 or 18 at the point in time, thinking to herself that all will be well. But tragedy struck. Now, in this woman's mind, she didn't think she was doing anything wrong. And she probably did what she think was absolutely necessary at this point in time. She probably didn't have an alternative. And so personal circumstances often find us engaging in activity that, unfortunately, in this instance, we saw was not necessarily the best. But that's across the country.
Yes, it is.
It's not unique. You have people listening into us right now who probably leave somebody home to look after somebody else and listening to this conversation and realizing to themselves that that's risky behavior. But they probably don't have another choice.
But that is the thing, right? Where persons don't think that they have another choice. So then they're engaging in these behaviors that may likely result in the harm of a child. It's really a catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
What really needs to be done is that we need to start thinking outside of the box too. What I have found is that these things are happening because people lack any sort of support system. And that is really where the issue comes in. And this is a huge difference that we're seeing in trying to parent today versus several generations ago, where there was more of a community approach to raising children. Now, I'm not saying that that also didn't come with its cons and its adverse effects of raising children in a community sort of network, but people are so much more isolated now that they can't even think of other options in terms of supervision of children. So, and we understand that. We understand that a lot of parents are severely isolated. This is where agencies such as mine, social services agencies, come in to be able to speak to that parent and help them create a support network. Help them explore various options in terms of getting proper supervision for children. Because there's usually always an answer, you know. It's just that you on your own, who might be experiencing a very difficult time, can't come up with a better solution.
Mm.
What we want is for these parents to reach out to us, reach out to somebody so that these different avenues can be explored. We want persons to understand that if you listening to this now, it really, a light bulb really goes off in your mind that you are doing something that might be detrimental to your children, reach out to us so that we can help. Reach out to any social services agency so that we can help explore different avenues and hopefully come up to some sort of solution to assist.
I know how challenging these things can be. And many times people resign themselves to say that, let's see me, I need to figure this out myself.
Nobody
here to help. Nobody care about what I'm going through. Let me see about me. You understand?
Right.
And that is why they end up in some of the circumstances that they do.
What I want to add to that, right, is that a lot of parents, young parents particularly, are dealing with their own trauma. A lot of these parents are dealing with their own history of mm-hmm. abuse, their own history of violence, and everything that comes with that, including that mentality where I need to do everything on my own, nobody cares about me, and I have no support. A lot of times when we sit down with these persons and we really get to the bottom of it, it's because they too themselves were victims of child abuse. And there are persons who are there to help. It's just that they're not willing to reach out to them. They don't know how to reach out to them. And there's so many broken lines of communication. And this is where we come in. This is where other social services agencies come in to help bridge those gaps.
There's a lot of discussion, not just here at home, but across the world, about this thing, about broken homes and how broken homes have contributed to some of what we see in society. There was a panel discussion in the U.S. that I had the opportunity to view. And one of the presenters drew a direct line to single mother homes, to state funding of single mother homes, and the problems that have come about as a result. Now, it's not a nice discussion that people want to engage in, because it touches at the core of what some of our problems were, where they come from. And the presenter was saying that there is documented evidence to show what happens in single mother homes, as opposed to single father homes. And they were saying that the state stepping in and funding single mother homes created a problem of which we are now seeing the end result.
It's called a dependency syndrome.
Right.
Yes, I know exactly what it is you're talking about. And that occurs when only one form of support is being provided to these households, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the Children's Authority and all, you know, our social services agencies, that is not the approach that we should be taking. And that's not the approach that we take,
mm-hmm.
where our intervention is more of a holistic intervention, where, yes, we might refer you to get a grant, but empowerment is such a huge part of that. Empowering these women to do something more, to start taking better care of themselves and their families, by extension, is what is supposed to be done.
Mm.
I'm very familiar with that dependency syndrome, and you are correct that we do have that here as well. A lot of, you know, some persons who reach out to us, that is the only thing that they're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we're talking about these things, of course, it's a case-by-case basis, right? We have some persons who really don't have good intentions, but then they're the ones out there who are really trying their best. And when we're talking about the concept of child neglect as well, that's oftentimes how we see it as well. Because neglect really is about taking a lack of initiative in terms of taking care of your children. And we have to distinguish between that and persons who are in severe cases of poverty, where they simply cannot do any better, but they are trying.
Mm.
You know?
I understand what you're saying. But I also understand how frustrating it can be to have a child.
Yes.
And persons who have to deal with this on their own, being single parents, I don't know how they do it. I really don't, because having to earn an income and then see about this child and make provisions, it's an uphill task. Everybody knows that I had a daughter in February this year. She's 8 months, but she's a handful. And when you have two persons who are as involved in other things as we are, a child really does tax your patience. And you have your other things that frustrate in you. And you have other things that you have to deal with. You don't get enough sleep. You're spending your time doing all different kinds of things, making a living. And my situation is not unique. You have persons all over the place. And then you have this child that requires this amount of attention, this amount of patience.
Yeah.
That it's difficult. I've seen some stories recently where people put children to sleep and the child chokes and dies. Spit up milk and when they because the child dead. And then there are other instances that we've seen recently where children were taken to hospital and blunt force trauma was the cause why the child died, meaning that somebody beat the child.
Yeah, so those are two very, very different sets of circumstances. Yeah.
But the One stems from not being as aware, or probably you're tired because this child taking all this time off, you know, rather than pay the attention that you need to a sleeping baby or putting the baby in the right position, whatever else, there's a lapse in judgment that results in something unfortunate. And then there are other instances where you lash out because there's only so much you could take and you don't have the support, you don't have assistance, you don't have anybody who could help you and say, oh, listen to me, see, this is getting too much, you take over. And we have very unfortunate circumstances. What would you advise persons? Can you give advice to persons who have children, newborn or whatever else, when it comes to they feel like if they're at their wits' end, what should they do?
So what you actually described there really speaks to why we have so much high numbers of physical abuse being perpetrated against children. It's really parental stress and feeling so frustrated that you don't know what else to do, that your child actually becomes your target of all of this stress and anger, and you're using that child almost like a punching bag to get that stress out, sometimes willfully and then sometimes out of real severity. We understand that parents are really struggling. Some parents are really struggling out there. And if a person feels like they've reached that level where they're at their wit's end, we implore persons to reach out to us so that we can assist. Reach out to any social services agency. Tell somebody so that we can get that information and that we can assist. At the Children's Authority, we don't only assist children. We seek to intervene with whole families, with entire families. The best thing that a person in a position like that can do is realize that there is a problem and seek help, seek assistance before something detrimental happens to that child and to that person. And I will say that in a lot of cases, we have seen that happen where persons reach states where they understand and they realize that they are going to be a danger to the child and to themselves, and they come into the authority and they let us know. They go to a police station and they let them know.
Mm. Well, there's one element of our discussion that we need to get to before we wrap up, and that is what we saw, what's on the front page of the Guardian newspaper, and what we've seen before, and I'm positive it's not the last time we're going to see it, a child's body found in the garbage. Newborn. This we were told, newborn baby girl, placenta in the bag. We had an incident some time ago where a child was dropped off at the San Fernando General Hospital in a cardboard box.
Yes.
And we've had numerous instances. It's not the first, and unfortunately, it may not never be the last. What could force someone? And I use the term force because I don't think anybody would do this willingly. What could force someone to take that kind of action?
So I've seen so much discussion on social media regarding this topic where, you know, the common thread is, how can somebody do something like that? And then you bring it back to yourself and you say, I could never do something like that. What I want to explain is that that person might be going through something so severe that we can't understand, or we can't fathom, or we cannot grasp what that person might be going through. Mm-hmm. And in no way is this me condoning that type of behavior. I am just saying that persons who find themselves in situations where they might be leaving a baby in a garbage bag or putting a baby in a box somewhere, they might be going through real severe circumstances. A lot of the times when we find that situations like this have happened, it was because of some sort of abuse that occurred that led to that pregnancy in the first place. And that's something that we don't take into consideration a lot. We always just wonder, how can this person carry that baby for 9 months, look at that baby, go through labor, look at that baby being born, and then put it in a garbage bag? What we might not know is how that person suffered for that 9 months. We also don't know how that child was conceived in the first place and what she had been going through for that 9 months, trying to conceal that pregnancy, trying all sorts of ways to get rid of that pregnancy and being unsuccessful, having not by any sort of choice, but almost by force to carry that baby to term and then go through labor and then not knowing what to do with it next. We don't know the circumstances. We don't know if it's a child that happened to. It could have been.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been that child was a minor. It could have been that person was a victim of abuse. We really don't know the circumstances to make any sort of judgment on that. What we want persons to know and to understand is that there are options. There are options if you find yourself in a situation where you are pregnant, where you don't know what to do. You don't know what to do with that baby. You don't know how you're going to be able to care for that baby. I'm not sure if, you know, the public is aware, but the Children's Authority also deals with foster care and adoption. And we would want persons like that to come to us. Those persons more than likely had absolutely no support, no kind of support system around them, nobody to guide and tell them what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they found that might have been the best situation. It's really unfortunate when we find babies in bags where they're dead versus where you find a baby alive in a box. Because we can still do something with that. We can tend to that baby and we can help that baby. But not everybody knows the options that are out there. So this is what we want persons to understand. That we are here to help and there are options for those babies.
I think the fact that it's not more widely known is an indictment against us as a population.
Correct.
Because we had one caller this morning, he made that point abundantly clear that people should have that information available to them, that this avenue does exist, that you do not have to put the baby in a bag and dispose of. We don't know if the baby was born alive or dead or what. We don't know.
Yeah.
As you're rightly raising, for a situation like this to occur, it could have been a minor who was impregnated under questionable circumstances.
Yes.
So because of that, they kept the... We really don't know. People fast and loose with their mouth and they say all kind of thing and pass judgment on people without having the details. But regardless of how you slice it, it's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. But what I want to put out there too is that person is probably going through such psychological turmoil right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would hope that they would also seek some sort of assistance for that.
Well, let's take a couple of calls because we do have a couple of people trying to get on. Hello, good morning.
Good morning again, Satish, and good morning to the lady there who is from the Children's Authority, I presume. Ma'am, I want to tell you that I am fully conversant with what you have explained in relation to the law and persons who may have babies that they may find in some way they really don't want to keep as a process and all of that. But, you know, I'll tell you something. There is the instance where individuals prefer to just remain anonymous. They don't want to go through these circumstances. And for the sake of the baby, of that human life, we as a society must develop laws that allow for that. In some states in the United States of America, in some countries in Europe, you can do it. You can go leave the baby at a pastor. You could leave it at a hospital counter. No questions asked. And you can walk away. And perhaps we need to look again at our laws and see how we can accommodate such in order to save the life of these many babies. This is just a guess I'm making here, that may have gone in the garbage unobserved because a hand did not put you through the back. I listen to your comments.
But there is nothing stopping somebody from doing that here. There is no law that prevents somebody from, as you said, dropping that baby off by a pastor, dropping that baby off in the hospital, dropping the baby off at a police station, anonymously, as you said. There's nothing stopping persons from doing that. And this is what we want people to be aware of, right? That there are options rather than putting the baby in a garbage bag.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish, and to your special guest. If someone have a baby and within a year and something they have a twin and they have three children and they can't know, like how they have the leech to put on children's hand. If you put a leech on a child's hand and have it secure somewhere in your house, if you have to do your work outside. Is that illegal? I listen to you. Thank you.
You mean tying the child up?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely not okay. Putting a child on a leash where, you know, they are restrained. A lot of damage and harm could come to a child in that matter. That would definitely would be considered
cruel.
That's how we call it. That's what we call it, cruelty to a child. That's definitely not something that is encouraged. What you can do is put the baby, the child, in a safe space. This is why we have playpens. That's still a thing, right?
It is. Yeah. But it's an out of the box. But she's just trying to probably suggest
come up with options. But you know, we have to also take into consideration the rights of a child and things that would inadvertently cause harm to a child. And putting a child on a leash, particularly something short, because I'm assuming you don't want that child to be roaming freely, that's cruelty to a child, and that's not something that we would encourage. We'd encourage that you come up with some alternative solution to managing those children within the space, within the home, that doesn't infringe upon the rights of that child.
This, because what the caller is suggesting is anonymity. If taking the situation with this child who was born and who was found in this bag, can people come to the children's authority in a manner as he was suggesting and not necessarily identify themselves? Or let's just say somebody knew the person and the child was born.
Yeah, we've had cases like that.
Really?
We've had cases like that where children were dropped off with persons and then those persons brought the child to the children's authority.
And what happens in a situation like that?
Now, of course, it is our duty to try to find the parents of that child, because child abandonment is technically a crime. It is, right?
I think that's what the caller was trying to allude to, that if we have child abandonment charges that someone could face, it prevents them from seeking the assistance or like putting the child somewhere, going to somebody else. And he was suggesting that, well, maybe we need to do away with that. But that's a recipe for a lot of problems.
That is a recipe for disaster, because then we'll find more and more that persons are having babies and then abandoning them, which is not something that we should be heading towards.
You were telling us about some of the actual cases.
Yeah, actual cases where children were left in the care of random people. So I have this one case where this woman was in a KFC and a person with a baby asked her to just watch the child while she went to the restroom, and she just never came back.
Wow.
Yeah. We find children wandering and we persons just bring them in. More and more, these are the type of things that we're seeing.
You know, I understand that there's the need to protect the child's identity in instances like these.
Yeah.
For the obvious reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it would serve this nation well if the Children Authority can document some of these cases using actors or recreating scenarios and putting together videos or whatever else to show exactly what happens. That would be, if a media house, because we have crimes are recreated for certain shows, and so if we could tell people exactly what's going on in this country, we might probably prevent someone somewhere, somehow, from abandoning a child. And I don't know if anybody could ever think about it or would be willing to do it, but it's a worthwhile adventure. Because what you're saying here to me now is so troubling.
It is. And I think a lot of the public are not really aware of the extent to which abuse and neglect is happening in Trinidad.
Are we seeing increases in it?
Yes.
And is that because of what? Economic challenges, what's causing it?
A lot of different factors. The pandemic definitely made a lot of situations worse in terms of parental frustration. So then we're seeing more physical abuse. In terms of persons severely struggling financially now because of the effects of the pandemic, this is where they now are neglecting children because they can't provide supervision. So definitely we've seen uptick in the number of cases that's been reported, particularly with neglect, in terms of neglect.
Let's take another call before we wrap up. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Satish. Good morning to your host. I'm now going to call about the effect of the pandemic on a parent's ability to take care of the child, because in so many cases, a person had to literally choose between, and we're not talking about little children, talking about teenage children, going to work or keeping an eye on the child because they had absolutely nobody to, because this was over a long period of time. And nobody, a lot of parents probably were not able to take care of the child adequately, and probably in many instances that child was left at home alone to their own devices, and probably there's no statistical data to support it. But I wonder how many children were introduced to alcohol, to illicit drugs, and to even to sex during that intervening period. We probably will never know. I had a conversation with Satish when a lot of these incidents took place, and I expressed to him, and I'll share it with you now, that I felt as though we are sending a wrong message to some of these parents and them, and maybe some of them need to be arrested, notwithstanding all the pain that they feel and the anguish that they feel. At the end of the day, a life has been lost, and there is some responsibility that needs to be held. And maybe the right message would be, in some of these instances, to arrest these persons and maybe charge them with abandonment, and maybe not jail them necessarily, but to send a message to parents that it's not okay for you to be negligent with your point where the child would lose their life. I wonder to myself what role the cell phone may have played in some of these incidents and them. And again, we will never know. The right message needs to be sent, and maybe it's time for the law to start to take a role in some of these unfortunate events. Now go on.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's take another call before we get your responses. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, all. Satish, I must say, what a really good program you have with this guest this morning. Ma'am, I must say, whatever you say makes so much of sense, especially to the young people who are having children these days, and I think when they're not ready for them, and a child should not be brought in this world just to be suffered, you know. And too many times you hear stories about the neglect of children, and so in my days of child rearing there was family planning. I don't know if that still exists, but I know there's a religious side of that one too. But you know, young people these days, my advice to them: bring your child in this world when you're ready for them. Thanks a lot.
Well, it's good advice, but it doesn't necessarily work that way. Because what you're talking about is planned parenting, and there are very few people who actually engage in planned parenting.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, I remember. Yeah, I remember speaking to persons from family planning. And we are real issues with that in this country when it comes to family planning and persons taking the necessary steps, and they spoke about teenage pregnancy. We've had those discussions. Children making children, and at the end of the day, it's a vicious cycle and everything else. But we're coming close to the time when we need to wrap up our interview. We've gone much longer than we're supposed to. And you can, somebody else calling here. Let's see who this is. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish, and to your honorable guest here. What is the relationship we have with the upper income group, the middle group, and the lower income? From which group most of our children come from? Where these are disadvantages. Thank you.
Child abuse occurs across any sort of determinant factors like that. We're finding that children are being abused in any bracket of economic status, area.
Let me simplify the question that he wants to ask. Is that poor people thing?
What exactly?
Child abuse.
No, it's not.
That's the question you wanted to ask.
No, and the answer to that is no, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see, sometimes we have our own preconceived biases.
We definitely do.
About when we speak of some of these things.
Yeah.
Domestic violence is another one we think is only a poor people problem.
And it's not.
It's definitely not, I think. Let me take in another call. Hello, good morning.
Hi, Satish. Good morning.
Good morning.
A wonderful program with this young lady there. I think that some of these people who claim to be parents and is causing these kind of incidents with young children, I think they should be put to a test case, because too many times these things happen and hardly they get people that take accountability for the actions. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. You see, there are some of us who in society Another phone call. There are some of us who in society, could you see the public interest is there. People are concerned. So this is going to be the final call, I promise. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Satish. I grew up in a different time when we had one breadwinner in the family so that my mother would have stayed at home. But there would time, from time to time, she would have had to go out. And my bigger sister, who would have been 14, 15 at the time, would have taken good care of me. I am thinking, number one, what makes it this magical age that 17 and a half is too young, but 18 is okay. I'll just keep it short because time. But I think that if the state is telling me that I cannot leave my child unattended, whether my husband is dead in jail or whatever, then they need to provide some way for me to be able to send this child to school, to get funding to send that child to school, whether I have to work, whatever, if they have to make a subvention. Or probably what we need to have is some community centers where we can have these children stay during the course of the day, where the parent would provide the food or something like that. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call. We spoke about that time and time again during the program about the facilities that are available, and you said, interestingly, that Children's Authority does have a number of facilities that people are not necessarily aware of. So let's end our conversation here this morning by telling people how they can contact the Children's Authority and benefit from some of these services.
So definitely we want everybody out there to know that we have a 24-hour, 7-days-a-week hotline that the Children's Authority can be reached, and that is at 996 or 800-2014. This is the number that we need persons out there to call and report things that you are seeing with children. If children are being neglected, if you are aware of a case of abuse. And we also want to remind children that they themselves can pick up the phone and call us and let us know what's happening. So these are the numbers that we can be contacted on. We do have a bright social media presence, Facebook, Instagram at Children's Authority of Trinidad and Tobago. And then we have our website at ttchildren.org, where much more information can be found, including on foster care and adoption, because, you know, we were talking about the fact that a lot of people are not aware that we do have these services in Trinidad. It is accessible. It is something that is very much operational, and we are always looking to recruit new foster parents. So if persons out there feel that they have the space, they have the time, they have the energy to put towards looking after some children, please reach out to us to get some more information on how to become a foster parent.
I want to thank you for being with us here this morning. And I want to make, I say this to my listeners, this program is much more than just a talk show. Because I do hope that the discussions that we have from time to time make a difference in someone's life. And that the information presented gives someone somewhere who may need it an opportunity or an avenue that they don't think that they have at this point in time. People call me for all kinds of things. And on this matter, as important as this one is, if you feel you can't reach out to the Children's Authority as a first step, feel free to call so that we can get you to where you need to be. Everybody has my phone number already. Because even up to last night, I was dealing with people who have trying circumstances. There is always an avenue that you can explore. There is always. As bad as things may seem, as insurmountable as the challenge may present itself, put your faith in that somebody will listen to you and that somebody will help.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.